still here. I mean, it must have worked for a while.
It did work.
It is still working, you know.
It did work. But, right. You know, like, people, activists seem to want to, like, to resort to these old archaic strategies. Like, you know, still to this day, people are talking about, well, what we need to do, we need to get out on the street, we all need to get arrested, and they don't have enough jails to hold us all.
Right.
That worked in the 50s. They do have enough jails to hold us all and make it cost effective.
And they got more jails.
They can make money off us now. You know, it's that kind of stuff doesn't work. So maybe it works a couple times. But the more times a thing works, the more manpower they give to sit around and unwork that. And I don't know if we have that kind of manpower. Nobody pays, you know, you and me to sit around in a think tank and discuss strategies all day.
That's true. Well, I would encourage people to just give a call to 427-4523 if you have a... You know, if you want to offer your support, say, for a phone number to contact or be on a phone tree, if you want to be informed. And if you want to actually talk about this further, of course, we are having a live discussion here on Free Radio, 96.3 FM at 427-3772.
And I'll clear that line now.
And you can, you can sing something, but then, of course, I'd have to arrest you, unless you're more than 10 feet from a, actually, it's more than 6 feet from a building at the moment.
I'd get closer to the building if the cord was longer.
Okay, well, we'll keep our eye on
show.
Thanks. And that was broadcaster, free radio pioneer, and folk singer, also independent business person, Phil Free, who's has got some cautionary words for us and some alarmist words. And that's good, because it's time to sound the alarm when the independent media are being forced off the air, as has happened in Berkeley, and as we are gearing up to be concerned about happening here. If you got a video camera and you want to make it available, if you got a tape recorder, if you want to come down on a short minute notice, we used to call it in 1991 when the People's Park was under threat of demolition, the bulldozer alarm. Now, it has to be said, we didn't stop People's Park from getting demolished, but we did get rid of that volleyball court and keep half the park for the people up in Berkeley. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, one point that I'm not clear about is, like, when I was listening to the interview with Captain Fred and the V-Man, it seemed to me that Captain Fred said that the FCC officers didn't have a warrant. Because he asked him first, he goes, V-Man said, did they have a warrant? And Captain Fred said, no, I didn't see any warrant. Mm-hmm. Somebody let him in. Mm-hmm. And the interview, you know, I don't know what the validity of the statement, and maybe somebody else can call up who has better information, but based on the interview, it sounded to me like somebody in Berkeley Liberation Radio let the FCC in the door when they did a visit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That could be, although according to that interview, remember that there was a large number, then he said 15 marshals, but I heard Captain Fred say two armed marshals, so I'm not sure. But a number of people were armed, and so...
Just because they came in numbers doesn't mean they had a warrant.
No,
it doesn't. It kind of assumes that Captain Fred... I mean, it makes you think that, yeah, there's a strong possibility that Captain Fred didn't see the warrant, but they had one. Yeah,
Was he one of the people at the studio, or did he just report from...
No, he reported to Vinny in an interview.
Yeah, I heard the interview. I just wondered, was he talking about what he saw, or was he talking about what, you know, some... Because when I talked to Vinny...
He said he's seen court paperwork.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if he saw it because he was there or if he saw it later. I mean, I think... I don't think he was one of the people who was in the studio.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he was there.
But I think, you know, they're meeting up at the Long Hall tonight in Berkeley, and I've asked... My producer to try to get in touch with the Long Haul, that we might be able to do a direct interview with him to get some more information.
All right. Hey, that'd be really cool. Make sure you find out about that. And for the people here, I'd say we got some great tactics, I think, in store. Some nifty ideas that we can't really discuss in full detail, but I think that if the FC comes and does a seizure, we're actually going to turn around and embarrass them. You know, in front of the whole nation, we're going to make them look like a bunch of dweebs, because this is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, it is.
There's one thing we're good at, is making FCC agents look like total dweebs.
That's been done by not just here in Santa Cruz, but up in San Francisco and in Berkeley.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to let the line go. Hopefully you can get in contact with those people in Berkeley.
Hopefully.
Bye.
Thanks. And we'll see if that happens. Looks like we got a busy phone line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm filling up the piss bottles right now.
Oh, no, it's the Campbell Street terrorist. Sounds like Skidmark Bob.
Yes, it is.
And you don't have your guitar anywhere near a building, do you? Otherwise, I'm going to have to call Julie Hendy and possibly Ed Porter.
Not at the moment, no.
Okay, all right.
No. Keeping that under wraps.
All right,
now.
I want to make sure you're staying legal. You know.
Into digital warfare now. I just wanted to comment. I heard Eon talk about the possibility of not a warrant. There's a bunch of pictures up at the San Francisco Indie Media website. I think Gerald Sanders, I forget his name, the guy that does Flavor Vote Radio, visited the station and took a bunch of pictures, and they did indeed force the door open. It looks like what it was is it was in a gutted-out warehouse where a lot of bands like to perform, and basically the door didn't have any molding on it to begin with, so it looks like they just like kind of busted the jam open and came in, and it appears that it's a warrant. There was like one of those legal papers like you see when you have a warrant. You can't really see the words and stuff, but if people want to go to SantaCruzIndieMedia.org or whatever, and on the right somewhere, it has a whole line of pictures they could go through and look at, and they could see where they came in and where they busted it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there was usually, I beg to differ if they just have a, you know, they just gather up 12 marshals just to come to a place without a warrant. I'm sure that they had to go get a warrant to get 12 U.S. marshals, you know. I'm sure they're always busy.
If they had 12, did you get any independent information? I keep hearing this figure. Actually, I heard more than that from Vinny, I think, the first time he told it to me.
I think KPFA reported something like that, too.
Really?
Several marshals came, yeah.
Several is one, but 12 is a pretty large force. I mean, outnumbers everybody in the building. I mean, anyway, go ahead. So, anyway, they had guns.
They might have to deal with Stephen Dunifer. He's a dangerous man with a soldering iron.
Hobble on up to him, yeah.
So, coming soon, in fact, right now, it's the... today is the 31st of August, 2023. That's the Thursday show of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides, and this time, as is becoming increasingly frequent on Thursday, we have a flashback, and it's going to be a flashback to December 12th, 2002, 21 years ago, and the main topics that get kind of mentioned on this show, well, it was the final exit of the so-called progressive Tres Amigos that were elected in 1998. That was Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and who turned out to be such a disappointment for some of us. They had promised various reforms around police and homeless civil rights and city council process. At least those are the ones that I was following. And we didn't get them. Quite the opposite, in fact. They kind of paved the way for, or at least they allowed for much more repressive legislation that came in 2002. This was the closing month of 2002 in December. And that is, well, in the summer of that year, several council members proposed ordinances that strongly expanded the infamous downtown no-sitting heavily restrictions on peaceful spare changing, tabling, and vending. And it was sent to the Downtown Commission, one of the city's sort of advisory groups, to kind of look over and get more public input before being made permanent, although it was passed in rush sessions in the summer while the students were conveniently away. And when the Downtown Commission came back with its more moderate proposals, the City Council refused them, and that became a topic of some concern and discussion. If you follow any of the shows in the month of December, and of course I did a show twice a week, pretty much without fail, unless I was ill or absent, you'll hear that discussed a lot more fully. Also, there was a raid on Berkeley Liberation Radio, which was the free radio station, the pirate radio station up in Berkeley, and we talk about that a lot on this particular show. You'll hear also discussion from Amy Courtney and Cassandra Brown, interviews of them and their commentary in court. as they defended themselves against Caltran and the cops because they put anti-war banners on the freeway overpasses and held them there. They didn't deface anything. They didn't vandalize anything, but they expressed a strong opposition to the war that had been declared in Afghanistan in 2001 by the Bush regime. And then you get to hear Michael Reyes talk about harassment at City Hall for sleeping by officers Klein and Seeley. They weren't sleeping. They were harassing the sleepers. And, well, more, too, which you'll be able to read in more detail when I put it on paper sometime in the next few days. And you can do that by going, staying in touch with the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, where you probably are at right now, because that's probably the best place to get this show, the most convenient one. You can pick it up at any time once it's been archived there, assuming the site is up, which it usually is, but not always. Remind you that all phone numbers you hear, except for the Huff line number, 423-4833, are questionable because they're 21 years old. There's no studio line anymore, although if you want to get on the air or get in touch with me when I get on the net, you should do it through my main phone number, the Huff line, 423-4833. And I'm also, I put out one issue of the Street Shit Sheet, and maybe putting out more. If you want to get an article in the Street Shit Sheet or get a copy of the Street Shit Sheet, you can call me up and dicker with me for a modest price. Actually, it's free. I'll show you how to get access to it. We should be having new edition of the Street Sheet. Street Spirit is still, I think, a fond dream or memory, because it's they haven't found funding yet for Street Spirit. But Street Sheet is distributed. I'll be picking it up probably in mid-month in Berkeley or San Francisco and bringing it down here. And then folks can read it, sell it, barter it for coffee or, I don't know, lethal drugs, you name it. But in any case, this is a flashback coming up. The first music you're going to hear is not the standard theme song that I use from Pins and Needles, Sing Me a Song of Social Significance. It's City for Sale, the kind of the signature tune of the 1999 San Francisco Mime Troupe production, which was called City for Sale, and it was about gentrification. So enjoy it, enjoy the show, and get in touch with me if you see anything happening on the streets, particularly violence against people outside, police abuse, or stuff you think needs to be addressed that isn't being addressed in the mainstream media, but that impacts the community, particularly poor people in the community. I went down to Chance Bodega, a funky corner store. I walked in and what I saw, it knocked me to the floor. Lots of jars full of cigars at $30 each. A neon sign of imported wine and microbrewery cheese. And there's no more single cigarettes and no more bargain beer. The writing's on the wall, my friends, the end is drawing near. SUVs are everywhere, old trucks cannot be found. This is not the place where I grew up, I don't know my own hometown. Look and you can see it, you can watch the city die. Shame you got to solve this, it's enough to make you cry. Where once there was a mural, there's a nice designer. Hell, the city that I knew is gone, this city is for sale. Apartments, farms, and condos, they burn down cheap hotels. Young bees take the south side, and the city goes to hell. Young bees take the south side, and the city goes to hell. We'll be right back.
the machine said it's for the guy at the time.
About 5:15 on Peace Friday, and we're out here at the corner, and we are a smaller group than usual, but lots of signs, a friendly-looking dog here on the shell grass area. Paul Franklin has arrived, and folks are gradually kind of wandering in. Most of us are concentrated on the Shell gas station corner, and there are only about 20 of us, and I have here Cassandra Brown. We're here with Cassandra Brown. Recently went to federal court.
And Willow went to be there, too, as well.
We have a witness. You're wearing a, you're carrying a Connect sign, and you, Willow, have a Weapons Inspectors to the U.S. So what happened, Cassandra, at this? We have some more observers. Are you weapons observers? Did you keep observing the bailiff's weapons?
We did that, yes.
No, I'm observing the stupidity of Caltrans.
The stupidity of Caltrans. Oh, so who wants to give the description of what happened there?
Who wants to give the description? Willow, I nominate Willow.
Willow, what happened? Were you there for Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday? Or?
Monday, but it was a pretty open and shut case that the Caltrans attorney was just reading from his boilerplate remarks that you make, you know, when you're at another hearing.
The issue was that Caltrans has the right to do whatever the fuck it wants, or what's the deal?
I think that's a fair way of saying it. Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, Amy and Cassandra were saying that not just American flags, but other messages should be allowed on the overpass.
Indeed. Yeah, so they got around that by not allowing anything on their property.
And did they actually... Was that the final decision of the court? I thought you were getting an injunction of some kind.
I think Cassandra knows the is more up to date than I am. I was only there that one day. But
right, let me see what she has. Yeah. Thanks, Willow. So, Cassandra, what happened at this trial?
Let's see what happened. The thing is, that's confusing about this to a lot of people is that we won the preliminary injunction. Then there was supposed to be a trial that came up for the injunction itself, so that it would be a stable set.
A permanent injunction.
So what happened at the trial was that we were asked, you know, what our
trial was this week, right?
Right, it was this week, Monday and Tuesday, November 18th and November 19th, and it was worse. Caltrans wants to let people put flags up, and they don't want to let any other messages fly on overpasses. So that's basically what it was, and the judge there was listening to both sides to hear what we had to say about it.
Dim bulb white, as I call him.
Yeah, but I like to call him sweet. You know, sweet man. He's on our side, white.
Yes, he had a good decision on your case and a bad decision on the Heil Krohn case.
In case anyone is at sea and also having a little trouble with the volume on this tape from about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Almost a month ago now, actually, one of the Peace Fridays. This is actually an interview with Cassandra Brown and Amy Courtney, who went to federal court for their trial for an injunction against Caltrans so that Caltrans could no longer put up its own propaganda material, its pro-Bush, pro-war, or as some would say, patriotic, I wouldn't say that, symbols on the overpasses of freeways, and then tear down or make rules against the flags, insignia, and messages from other people asking other questions. And Amy and Cassandra had a very kind of articulate presentation of this yesterday on KSCO. By the way, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, unless in case you haven't picked up on that. This is 96.3 FM, unlicensed pirate radio. We are on the air here in Santa Cruz, although our sister station, Liberation Radio in Berkeley, has been shut down. There's a as you probably heard if you were listening about 20 minutes ago, a great interview the V-Man did with Captain Fred of Liberation Radio, which kind of went into what happened up there. I heard about it yesterday. I was deeply alarmed, as I hope all listeners are, because this is the first major raid on the West Coast that I've ever heard about. I mean, Berkeley has been subject to injunctions, and Santa Cruz has been subject to FCC harassment with people knocking at our door and sending us nasty threatening letters with $100,000 fine threats. But this is the first time that a radio station on the West Coast that I've heard of, and I probably can be corrected by the V-Man, who has a much more encyclopedic knowledge of this than I do, of an actual raid with confiscations of equipment. I think some stations have voluntarily closed down. I think one did in Monterey, and I think one did in Big Sur some years ago. I'm not quite clear on that. But Free Radio Santa Cruz has operated for the last, 8 years, since 1995 in the spring. We've gone to different locations. Some of us have been there. I've been there nearly from the beginning. I can't say that I'm much more than a broadcaster. I do a little bit to help, and I get very concerned when my microphone is being threatened with removal, and that's what I kind of sense happening. The Sentinel occasionally will print a letter. The City on a Hill occasionally will print a letter. And, of course, I can always stand out on the street corner and distribute flyers. But Free Radio Santa Cruz has afforded me the opportunity to really not only get my voices out there, but to get a discussion out there on important issues. And I would really, I think it would be a great blow at not just the theoretical notions of free speech and the First Amendment, but just the reality of having a real dialogue and discussion if the FCC breaks down this door. So we need to do something to mobilize against that. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, I love that sound.
Sorry about that squeal there.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to throw in 2 cents on some of the stuff you were saying. I think our sister station actually committed suicide. I think that was our stepsister station. Huh. Our sister station was Free Radio Berkeley, and they voluntarily went off the air and died.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Of course, they were threatened with an injunction directly. They were further along in the legal process than we ever were.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, they were the legal process. They were the whole attempt at the legal process, I think, in the one case that got fought.
Right, and they were successful for about 5 years.
Yeah, they were the reason many stations were able to go on the air in the first place. Is the length that case held in limbo because the FCC had power issues with the judge, basically.
Elijah Wilkin, yeah. And we, however, we're the better, we're the best. We've been on for 8 years, knee-knee.
I don't know. I mean, we have been, but I don't know if that makes us the best. We just, we could never consent to go off the air. So that makes us more rebellious than the rest, I guess.
There's always some character with a transmitter on a bike or some such thing running around.
Yeah, I suppose we refuse to go away. And, yeah, I suppose that makes us, subversive and rebellious.
Now might be the time to pull out that old documentary that I guess somebody did interviewing, either it was you or it was interviewing Vinny or Bob about, the history of free radio. Remember that documentary? It was on about 6 months, a year ago.
Which one?
There was a woman. I don't know if she
was...
One of
those college ones? There's been a few of them.
Maybe so. Maybe that was the one I just remember most recently. A very interesting series of descriptions of all the different places that Free Radio Santa Cruz has been over its lifetime, although...
Very interesting places.
Here we are now, and I hope we can stay here by cracky.
Yep, but, if not... You know what? Some of the bike carts that used to be used for Free Radio Santa Cruz when they went mobile still exist. I see them riding around Food Not Bombs stuff to this day, long-lasting wooden bike carts. There's still some old-timers that remember how to do that. Right. We got better technology, so whatever.
We've got to be careful, though, because if Free Radio is driven onto the streets, we may be within 14 feet of a building. And
yeah.
You don't want to have any problems with the local police.
That's the problem when you're out on the streets. There are a whole bunch of other laws that apply, too. On top of, the fucked up laws were there in the first place. So.
This could be considered soliciting, the kinds of things we do. And, of course, we probably will be sitting down at different points. All these are barred on 95% of the Santa Cruz
sidewalk. Besides, it's technically an illegal activity. So if we're conducting an illegal activity in any public place, that's like loitering. loitering, you know, being in a place without legal reason to be there is loitering everywhere.
Yes, although the loitering laws were overturned federally in 1983 in the Larson decision.
Oh, we'll see how much good that does us now.
Well, there haven't been a conviction for loitering except in Berkeley under the new Proposition N for the two-year period when it was enforced. But that was loitering with intent to sell drugs.
Yes. Well, anyways, yes. I'm an alarmist. And I think we should be very alarmed at this stuff happening in this particular political climate. And if stations start going off the air, we better be ready. War is coming. If they're going to go, like, disrupt the communications of the opposition, which I imagine we would be.
We are.
That's one of your last stages before invasion. Be ready.
Yeah, well, I've already encouraged people with video cameras to give a call to the free radio voicemail at 427-4523 to offer. I think we really need a video camera in the studio, frankly, so that it can be used to video whatever happens if an emergency arises.
Now we have a webcam. Throw it on. Everybody could see it live.
That would be great. But, I mean, at the very least, I know I've talked to at least two people who are interested in coming down here on short notice if there's an attack on the station. Of course, the problem is it'll be probably over almost before it begins. Is that?
Yeah, that's the thing.
So we need to have, I guess there used to be a little camera in the studio, which we could sort of take still pictures of these clowns as they barge in.
But then you got to remember, throw the camera out the window or something before they seize it as evidence.
Right, or eat the camera, perhaps.
Because it could be a threat to national security.
It could be.
Because if people ever saw the dweeby little geeky guys that actually are FCC agents, it could cause a danger to national security because nobody would fear them anymore.
Let's not forget the overweight middle-aged men.
Yeah, we could outrun most of them fucks.
No, right. I'm one of the... I'm talking about the broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of us get
along
so in age, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, so I, what would you advise, Phil, for the community to do to prepare for this threat? I mean, really, to mobilize against this threat, and also, of course, to support Liberation Radio in Berkeley.
Advise the community to do...
Yes, as an elder.
There's this thing they do in Northern Ireland just before the troops invade. They bang their trash can lids so everybody can hear. Always keep in mind old primitive communications techniques, because the problem with all our modern technology is it can be done away with. They can sure disrupt our live stream real quick if they want to. They can take our transmitter off the air. They could just jam our transmitter if they want to. We better come up with other solutions. I don't know. Maybe we need a satellite. We need satellite radio. I don't know. Hard to tell anybody what to do in this present climate, because this is just a whole new world. Fascism has showed its teeth.
Well, I know that in the past we've been threatened with attacks from the SEC.
Yeah.
5 years ago, the police came to Becky Johnson's house when she had the station on the property that she was leasing. And, you know, the FCC came to the door, and her daughter said, "Where's your warrant?" And they kind of looked at her, and, "You can't come on without a warrant," said the 12-year-old girl. And they were held at bay. And then, you know, I came out and did a little tape recording of them, and they said, you know, "Here's a $100,000 fine if you don't behave." And we all said, "Well, you know, send us the check, and we'll talk about it, or send us the bill, and we'll discuss it." But so they didn't come back, but we did mobilize at that time to be aware of that and kind of to try to, I mean, there are questions up in Berkeley. Should the equipment be, you know, thinned out and hidden in a safe house? I mean, all kinds of questions are circulating there. And what should, again, I return to what the community should do. I mean, there's a notice in the station that there's an emergency meeting Sunday, you know, but that's for the radio members. What about the general community? What can they do? I don't really know either, so I'm just asking.
Well, I'm not sure what to do, but one thing I'll tell you not to do that everybody seems to always want to do. This is what I always try and remind people. Don't do anything that worked before. Everything you just described that worked on the FCC last time, they've sat at their offices and discussed at great length. They've studied a way around anything you've done that worked. So develop something absolutely new is my only advice I could offer. I don't know what could be new, because I'm getting old, you see. But us old-timers, you know, recall that, you know, everything that we've tried that worked, they came back with a way to thwart that.
Well, I don't know. We're still here. I mean, it must have worked for a while.
It did work.
It is still working, you know.
It did work. But, you know, like, people, activists seem to want to, like, to resort to these old archaic strategies. Like, you know, still to this day, people are talking about, well, what we need to do, we need to get out of the street, we all need to get arrested, and they don't have enough jails to hold us all.
Right.
That worked in the 50s. They do have enough jails to hold us all and make it cost effective.
And they got more jails.
They can make money off us now. You know, it's that kind of stuff doesn't work. So maybe it works a couple times. But the more times a thing works, the more manpower they give to sit around and work that. And I don't know if we have that kind of manpower. Nobody pays, you know, you and me to sit around in a think tank and discuss strategies all day.
That's true. Well, I would encourage people to just give a call to 427-4523 if you have a... You know, if you want to offer your support, say, for a phone number to contact or be on a phone tree, if you want to be informed. And if you want to actually talk about this further, of course, we are having a live discussion here on Free Radio, 96.3 FM, at 427-3772.
And I'll clear that line now.
And you can, you can sing something, but then, of course, I'd have to arrest you, unless you're more than 10 feet from a... Actually, it's more than 6 feet from a building at the moment.
I'd get closer to the building if the cord was longer.
Okay, well, we'll keep our eye on it.
Show.
Thanks. And that was broadcaster, free radio pioneer, and folk singer, also independent business person, Phil Free, who's has got some cautionary words for us and some alarmist words. And that's good, because it's time to sound the alarm when the independent media are being forced off the air, as has happened in Berkeley, and as we are gearing up to be concerned about happening here. If you got a video camera and you want to make it available, if you got a tape recorder, if you want to come down on a short minute notice, we used to call it in 1991 when the People's Park was under threat of demolition, the bulldozer alarm. Now, it has to be said, we didn't stop People's Park from getting demolished, but we did get rid of that volleyball court and keep half the park for the people up in Berkeley. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, one point that I'm not clear about is, like, when I was listening to the interview with Captain Fred and the V-Man, it seemed to me that Captain Fred said that the FCC officers didn't have a warrant. Because he asked him first, he goes, V-Man said, did they have a warrant? And Captain Fred said, no, I didn't see any warrant. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, somebody let him in. Mm-hmm. And the interview, you know, I don't know what the validity of the statement, and maybe somebody else can call up who has better information, but based on the interview, it sounded to me like somebody in Berkeley Liberation Radio let the FCC in the door when they did a visit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That could be, although according to that interview, remember that there was a large number, then he said 15 marshals, but I heard Captain Fred say two armed marshals, so I'm not sure, but a number of people were armed, and so...
I mean, just because they came in numbers doesn't mean they had a warrant.
No,
it doesn't. It kind of assumes that Captain Fred, I mean, it makes you think that, yeah, there's a strong possibility that Captain Fred didn't see the warrant, but they had one. Yeah,
Was he one of the people at the studio, or did he just report from...
No, he reported to Vinny in an interview.
Yeah, I heard the interview. I just wondered, was he talking about what he saw, or was he talking about what, you know, some... Because when I talked to Vinny...
He said he's seen court paperwork.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if he saw it because he was there or if he saw it later. I mean, I think... Mm. I don't think he was one of the people who was in the studio.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he was there.
But I think, you know, they're meeting up at the Long Hall tonight in Berkeley, and I've asked... my producer to try to get in touch with the Long Haul, that we might be able to do a direct interview with him to get some more information.
All right. Hey, that'd be really cool. Make sure you find out about that. And for the people here, I'd say we got some great tactics, I think, in store. Some nifty ideas that we can't really discuss in full detail, but I think that if the FCC comes and does a seizure, we're actually going to turn around and embarrass them. You know, in front of the whole nation, we're going to make them look like a bunch of dweebs, because this is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, yes it is.
There's one thing we're good at, is making FCC agents look like total dweebs.
That's been done by not just here in Santa Cruz, but up in San Francisco and in Berkeley.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to let the line go. Hopefully you can get in contact with those people in Berkeley.
Hopefully.
Bye.
Thanks. And we'll see if that happens. Looks like we got a busy phone line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm filling up the piss bottles right now.
Oh, no, it's the Campbell Street terrorist. Sounds like Skidmark Bob.
Yes, it is.
And you don't have your guitar anywhere near a building, do you? Otherwise, I'm going to have to call Julie Hendy and possibly Ed Porter.
Not at the moment, no.
Okay, all right.
No. Keeping that under wraps.
All right, I want to make sure you're staying legal. You know.
Into digital warfare now. I just wanted to comment. I heard Eon talk about the possibility of not a warrant. There's a bunch of pictures up at the San Francisco Indie Media website. I think Gerald Sanders, I forget his name, the guy does Slave Revolt Radio, visited the station and took a bunch of pictures, and they did indeed force the door open. It looks like what it was is it was in a gutted-out warehouse where a lot of bands like to perform, and basically the door didn't have any molding on it to begin with, so it looks like they just like kind of busted the jam open and came in, and it appears that it's a warrant. There was like one of those legal papers like you see when you have a warrant. You can't really see the words and stuff, but if people want to go to SantaCruzIndieMedia.org or whatever, and on the right somewhere, it has a whole line of pictures they could go through and look at, and they could see where they came in and where they busted it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there was usually, I beg to differ if they just have a, you know, they just gather up 12 marshals just to come to a place without a warrant. I'm sure that they had to go get a warrant to get 12 U.S. marshals, you know. I'm sure they're always busy.
If they had 12, did you get any independent information? I keep hearing this figure. Actually, I heard more than that from Vinny, I think, the first time he told it to me.
I think KPFA reported something like that, too.
Really?
Several marshals came, yeah.
Several is one, but 12 is a pretty large force. I mean, outnumbers everybody in the building. I mean, well, anyway, go ahead. So, anyway, they had guns.
They might have to deal with Stephen Dunifer. He's a dangerous man with a soldering iron.
Hobble on up to him, yeah.
Especially got a soldering iron in his hand all ready to go.
Got a wicked tongue, too.
What else do I say? I can't think of anything else. Maybe someone else might want to call in more information. But, yeah, they're supposed to have a meeting tonight. And it'd be good to get an interview maybe from Gerald or maybe from the guy that actually got busted. He didn't get arrested. It sounded like the normal seizure deal that they come in and arrest the equipment and they take it away in a little U-Haul. So
search and destroy, sort of a spoiling operation.
Yeah, so folks that know where the station is, you haven't seen a U-Haul and a bunch of unmarked vehicles and guys with sunglasses, probably might be a raid. So,
but let me ask you this, Skidmark, because you're a man who's been kind of maybe monitoring the incoming traffic on the Free Radio message line. Have many members of the community expressed concern and called into the line to offer their support?
I don't think a lot of people know about it right now.
Because I know I informed the inimitable Dan White.
Was it in the Sentinel at all today?
No, I don't think it was in the Sentinel.
Oh,
maybe
geez.
In the Sentinel. I think I
wasn't on Democracy Now! Either. So.
I didn't hear that. Yeah, it wasn't? Okay. Well, probably wasn't on Berkeley Liberation Radio either.
No.
Sorry about that, yeah.
KPFA News covered it. Free Speech News didn't cover it either, as far as I know.
I left a message with...
broadcast today.
Sorry. Left a message with San Francisco Liberation Radio, Richard Edmondson, which is, of course, another fine long-term station up there. Haven't heard back from him. I don't know if they're on the air or what.
That would be my guess, is that they would be next in line, because they've done that with their little visits. I think, what was it? They visited there, and they visited San Francisco, and then we got a little visit one time.
Mm-hmm.
So they usually like to do these things in series, and I would imagine them coming early in the morning and planning a whole day event to come over here to Santa Cruz. Maybe they want to go to the boardwalk and hang out or... you know, go to Emily's Bakery and have a little, you know, hang out with the mayor or something.
Good thing to eat at Emily's Bakery.
But, you know, I would think it would be a whole day affair. One thing that if anybody would like to do, they could stake out the local U-Haul, because they seem to, I've noticed in almost every raid, they always rent a U-Haul somewhere. So I would imagine they would ride here and maybe rent it here. So if anybody works at a U-Haul place, listen to Free Radio, and see a bunch of guys with pocket protectors and sunglasses coming in there, beware, give us a call right away, 427-3772 or 427-4523.
Yeah, and I also, would encourage, maybe we should encourage a flood of calls to the FCC denouncing the raid on Berkeley.
And, yeah.
I mean, I think some, you know, very high-profile, I don't know whether it would be an antenna set at the top of the Hoosie Wetz's building in Oakland, you know, Earth First style, which I've never done, and, you know,
huh.
I'm afraid of heights myself. But, I mean, you know, this kind of thing, which it will come down when the FCC agrees to stop harassing free radio. I mean, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some more creative ways. You heard Phil Freeze saying that mass arrests don't seem to do it. First of all, we can't get the masses out there. But even when we do, you know, they got the jails to cover it. I don't know. I don't completely agree with that. But I think, you know, it's a point to be considered.
Well, they held them off for a while when Austin got busted, when Reckless got busted, her station. And she's actually on an injunction of some sort. She can't broadcast at all, or she can go to federal prison for that. But her station got busted, and a bunch of people showed up. Like, everybody heard it right away and came. And there was a huge protest, and a woman actually got run over by either a marshal or a FCC agent.
With any legal consequences, like lawsuits or anything?
No, of course, you know. The war on terrorism, they had to get out of there right away. There might be some anthrax in the area or something.
Oh, right. Well, and I guess Austin is still off the air. Is that the deal?
Oh, yeah, they're gone. I believe there's MicroKind Radio that was there, and there was Radio 1 also that got raided. Austin was really, I think, the most diehard of all the pirate radio stations, because they've been busted like 3 times, I think. First time they let him in, that they learned from that mistake, and then they dug the transmitter into the ground in this like bucket of like oil or something under the ground, and so, you know, we haven't done anything that elaborate, but we've been on the air for almost 8 years, so it's not like we're going to be here forever, you know, and we've kind of grown used to the safeness of our Santa Cruz area, but this fucking wonderful war on terrorism is going to be affecting us all, and this is one way it's going to, you know.
By the way, I would be happy to spring for some new Venetian blinds, a word to the
bulletproof wise. Bulletproof ones, maybe.
Well, at least eye-proof ones. We got some blinds, of, you know, what's the point of having a locked door people can see in, you know, it's sort of, you follow what I mean.
Well, anyway, I'll free up the line so other people may want to call in.
Hey.
Fill up your urine bottles and send them to the FCC.
All righty, it's a pisser, man.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, the last of the just, or at least hopefully not just the last. We'll see what's going on. If you want to call in, the number here is 427-3772. This is Bathrobs Pierce Broadsides. My broadsides are here, and hopefully you can give out a few of your own. And it looks like we got lots of traffic tonight. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I heard about the Berkeley closed down, and this seems like they're trying to clamp down on alternative expressions of different ideas, you know, different viewpoints of maybe organizing people to see another way and come together to unify against destructing actions against the planet. I mean, it seems like if you're not with us, you're against us. So if you're not with the plan, you're going to be squashed. It's like what they did to Wham was sort of like a slap in the face to the West Coast, saying, you know, don't think you're, just because you're in the West Coast and the, you know, Washington, D.C. and the power structures and the, basically in the East Coast in a way, that don't think you're free to do what you think you can do.
Yeah, I think it's hard to tell what the internal priorities of the FCC are, or whether it has anything to do with anything. It might be some bizarre inner schedule they have, or it might be the obvious that, you know, the Bush administration is projecting its power and its little kind of, you know, so-called independent or, you know, actually dependent bureaucracies like the FCC are also projecting their power. I mean, you see it in Santa Cruz. At the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday night, the Santa Cruz City Council rejected the provisions that their downtown commission had spent many months working on to work out a kind of an understanding with the street performers and come up with some reasonable changes. Instead, they just completely ignored the work, and they wanted to show that they were tough.
Right.
I think the FCC may be trying to do exactly the same thing. We're tough. We don't have to. We can give away the corporate airwaves, the AOR airwaves to the corporation, the people's airwaves.
For free.
You know, and if, as for these independent outlaws, we'll show you how tough, they say they've been around for 8 years, we'll stamp them out. You know, they can, you know, if they want to work at it, they obviously can certainly take us off the air initially. Whether they can keep us off the air, whether the cost will be too great for them,
right,
that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I guess being mobile helps a little bit.
It does, although I think, you know, that they can triangulate you if they really want to, but I imagine it certainly makes it a little more difficult.
Right.
But, you know, more than that, it's the determination to continue in the face of intimidation. We've been approached by the FCC numerous times, And, you know, they've threatened landlords, they've threatened tenants, they've threatened broadcasters, and we've just said no.
Uh-huh.
You know, show us your legal papers or leave. And, you know, we're not opening the door. You know, get off the property. You know, take a hike.
Right.
That's the answer. These are our airwaves. They belong to us. I don't mean the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. I mean the people of this country and the people of this world. That's what who the airwaves belong to.
Like, people need an outlet where they're not going to be cut off by the guy that's running the program, so to speak, the guy that has to put on the commercials at a certain place every hour, you know?
Except for me. I get to cut you off whenever I want.
Well, thank you very much. But anyway, I do appreciate your show, and keep up the good work, and just keep on going. And I think that there will be confrontations coming our way, just because anyone that's trying to show another way, like I said before, or kind of give another way to see things, they don't want people to have too many options in their viewing. They just want people to basically say, well, it's either this option or nothing. In other words, either you're with the war plan, which is going to protect our oil interests, which is what we all need to protect, right, because we all have to drive. I don't, but a lot of people do. Therefore, it's in our best interest to blow up Iraq. But then again, we're going to kill all these people like we've been killing people in the past.
Yeah, I don't think the administration has been pushing oil as the big reason to proceed. I mean, it's not like they've been babbling about weapons of mass destruction and chemical warfare and lying to inspectors and other... Some of the charges true, some of them false, but none of them justifying a war.
Right.
And, you know, it's... A lot of peace activity happening. I'm going to talk about that in a moment.
Yeah, definitely peace actions. There's going to be a big peace day at Watsonville Fairgrounds from the 14th to the 17th. It's going to be called Peace Aid, A-I-D.
Huh.
So look forward to that. There's going to be a need for volunteers, people to set up tents and stages, and they're going to get body rate and people like that. So it should be a monstrous event. So we do have hope. All we have to do is organize and attend these events.
Caller, is there a number to call to get information about that Watsonville Peace Aid?
I'll tell you what. I can call you back Sunday with a number.
Sounds good.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, phone line 427-3772. We're ringing off the hook here, and that's good. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, howdy. I'm a first-time caller. I'm just outraged that...
The hell you are. I recognize this voice, caller. You're that German...
See how, as a first-time caller, that could be.
You certainly sound like
South,
that winged up from Germany.
But,
so, caller, yeah, as a caller, I'm not going to give you the, you know, I'm not going to contribute to this fraud that you're some sort of first-time caller. You're the notorious man who listens to our station from, I don't know, one of those towns in Germany somewhere, are you not?
I've never been overseas myself.
Your southern accent does not fool me for a moment, sir. I know exactly, I think I can picture exactly who you are. Well, not perhaps not exactly. Anyway, what can I, speak up, go ahead.
Well, as I said, I'm just really to be serious, amazed that your fine station is apparently at risk.
Yeah, it's been at risk for 8 years at different points, and we've always kind of adopted a somewhat siege mentality, somewhat determined we're going to stick it out regardless, and then a series of other options when many of our problems have arisen not because of the FCC, but because we have the natural problems of collectives disagreeing and then losing our places where we do our work and having the buildings demolished from under us and things of that sort. But, I don't know how much you listen to this station. I know that you've called in several times on my show. Are you a regular listener to this station, or are you just an occasional?
I regular maybe not, but I do enjoy listening to now and then. It's the somewhat a change of pace from the fare that I'm used to over here.
Over here, of course, is where?
Well, wherever. But yeah. we don't have stations like that where we are here. That doesn't fit with the culture too well.
By the way, there actually are other free radio stations in the United States and in other countries which you can tune to. I think there's a website to go to, and perhaps some other listener who can call in and give the exact website address for the variety of stations. I think www.microradio.com. will get you, which you actually may be using right now to hear us, access to other free radio stations too.
Well, I'll certainly give that a try down south where I am. In a manner of speaking, of course.
In a manner of speaking, yes. Well, excellent. I really appreciate the support. Gosh, you know what you might do is send a letter in German to the... That would confuse them, wouldn't it?
Well, I imagine it would. If I was able to do that, you know, those high polluting languages, I have trouble enough with English. But maybe a friend of mine. I think I have an idea who that might be. Could up and do something like that.
Well, sounds good to me. And by the way,
okay, sir.
All right.
Now, just take care.
Well, and the same to you, sir.
Okay, there. Bye bye.
Bye bye. And once more, phone lines are open, 831-427-3772. If you're making a long-distance call, or if you're calling locally, it's 427-3772. The previous caller, right before this last one, talked about an upcoming peace event in Watsonville nearby, I guess on the 14th. Today is the 12th. Boy, the days fly in December. I myself visited the Santa Cruz City Council with an old chum. He called himself Stop the War Santa, and he actually... wait, I think he's here in the studio now.
Oh, stop the war! Yeah, stop the war!
That's... Anyway, that was the voice of this individual who showed up in a Santa outfit before the Santa Cruz City Council and the Board of Supervisors. And, heck, why hide it? I was, in fact, that individual and garbed up by some misguided peace activists who rented that suit out. Actually, I was part of a protest that's continuing in Capitola. I'm going to be returning when my Stop the War Santa suit on Friday. For Peace Friday, which begins at 4 o'clock at Water and Pacific Streets, as we've been doing for the last year, or certainly some of us, I not so much, but others more. And then there'll be on Saturday a repeat of the sort of spreading the peace sentiment in these times of war, and of course a commercial cupidity as Christmas comes down the pike, at Claire and 41st, which is sort of right off the freeway as you head off 41st toward the shopping center. You'll see Santa and his merry elves, some of them, with the appropriate signs. And you're welcome to join us for that peaceful event, such as it is. I was encouraged to read. I hadn't heard about it before, and I didn't read about it in the mainstream media, but that there were numerous arrests, numerous demonstrations, numerous protests, peaceful but vigorous protests across the country on Monday, December 10th. I may have that article. I'm going to look for it. But I was reassured, there were not the hundreds of thousands that showed up in Rome or in London, and the 50 to 100,000 that showed up in San Francisco, and twice that number in Washington, New York City. Yes, it was New York City. But still, the fact that voices are still being raised, anti-war congressmen, raise their voices. By the way, it wasn't Monday, it was Tuesday that these protests happened, now that I come to think of it. It was Monday that I think a number of anti-war Democrats in the House spoke out against the war, the kind of thing we've been trying to get Representative Sam Farr here locally to do and have not been successful in doing, other than sort of, if he's asked a question about it in some other subject, he talks about it, or if there's a vote in Congress coming up on a resolution, except, of course, for the military appropriation, which he seems to vote for with... no problem, and then defends in his letters, which I read on the air. I believe I read that letter. That might have been the missing show. I actually recorded a full show that didn't make it on the air. I have some tape. I don't know if there's going to be time to play it tonight. Tape of the visit to Representative Farr's office. We actually had several visits there. And I'm kind of jumping around tonight because of this sort of... Well, there's a variety of issues that are kind of mingling and mixing, as there usually are in my mind and in reality as well, ranging from the FCC's raid on Liberation Radio Berkeley to the Tuesday City Council's vote to essentially throw out many months of work by the Downtown Commission. And, of course, we have a flood of phone calls, so let's see what the people have to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I tend not to want to mention my name, but... You know who I am, or if you don't, you will figure it out pretty soon.
Okay.
I tuned in late. I have blues playing, and since your competition on KKUP, really good blues. But anyway, I remembered to tune it in, and I'm so sorry to hear about what's been going on. I mean, geez, it is actually scary, right down scary, that we don't, we're being challenged with free speech in a country that calls itself a democracy. And I really enjoy your show, and that's all I have to say.
Well, I appreciate that, and hey, call again.
I will.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, my concern is definitely the national war hysteria, the national madness that is being drummed up by the administration. And, of course, we're going to face it in North Korea, too, I'm sure, with the announcement today that Korea is putting its nuclear reactors back online. But I'm also concerned, and I think, well, I'm concerned with the silence about this locally. I don't see the kind of peace protests I'd like to. I'd like to see 24-hour vigils downtown. And if anybody wants to organize such a vigil, please call me. I'd love to be a part of it. My off-air number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We need to do that. We need to have a 24-hour presence in a visible place in the middle of the Christmas shopping season that lets the community know it's not an ordinary Christmas. We've got things to do that are more important than shopping. I'm sorry. Hi, you're on free radio.
Yes. I heard that the city council also did a 7-0 vote about medical marijuana or something?
Yeah, the city council actually isn't about medical marijuana. It's about its sweetheart deal with Valerie and Mike Corral of Wham. You're probably familiar with that group, caller.
Yeah.
And actually, this was discussed today on KSCO. Green Party activist Thomas Levitt and civil rights attorney and marijuana provider, one-time marijuana provider, Kate Wells, we're talking about this throughout the noon hour on KSCO, and it's also on santacruzindymedia.org. That's www.santacruz.indymedia.org. You can get kind of the update on that. But the short of it is that the Santa Cruz City Council and another private deal by the Corrals with council members Rotkin, Fitzmaurice, and Riley got, I think, authorization to be or actually deputized so that they can give out marijuana as sort of either official agents of the city or authorized by the city. And I have no problem with that, by the way. I think it's fine. The problem is that they are representatives of a small group of people that's exclusive, and their group, Wham, has fundamentally been the only group that's been legitimized and legalized by the city whose ordinances have destroyed other groups that have served a much broader swath of medical marijuana people. So the majority of people who want medical marijuana in this city have nowhere to go, not because of the feds, not because of the DEA, but because of Fitzmaurice, Rotkin, Matthews, all these people on the city council who made that law in 2000, in the spring and summer of 2000. And that included Valerie and Mike Corral, who, as I understand it, were the only people that I know of that were invited to these private conferences with city council members, so that other providers were excluded and everybody else was criminalized. That's kind of my understanding, caller.
I think she's the only provider around.
Speak a little louder. I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing.
I think she's the only provider around.
Well, there's a reason she's the only provider around, because they drove the cannabis pharmaceuticals out of business. The city attorney, the city manager, and the Sugar City Council, with the Corrals either cheerleading or doing nothing on the sidelines, allowed this to happen in the spring and summer of 2000 by writing laws and enforcing policies that criminalized that club when it was on Seabright, and then when they tried to move to Soquel Avenue.
That club would have closed down regardless of what the city did. They.
Why do you say that, Colin?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were starting to care more about the money than the patients.
Now, I've heard this charge from Valerie Corral about a week ago, and I'd like more specifics on it. Can you tell me more?
I used to be in that club, and they stopped giving out the free stuff about 6 months before they closed down.
Are you talking about the Maple Street Club?
Yeah.
Are you talking? No, that's not the same club. The Maple Street Club indeed kind of divided. That was the club that was present even before marijuana became legalized at a state level. It was operating in the early 90s. But I'm talking about the club that was opened up on Soquel Avenue. And they claimed that it was an inappropriate club because it was three blocks from a school, even though the school, I heard from Kate Wells, sent them a wreath. The principal of the school sent them a congratulatory wreath. So I think you're talking about a different thing there, caller.
The club on Maple?
No, the club on Maple is not the club I'm talking about. I'm talking about the club that opened up 5 years later in 2000 on Soquel. I mean, on Seabright, and then tried to move to Soquel.
How long was that particular club open?
It wasn't open very long because the law that the corrals, the sugar regime, and Rotkin, Fitzmaurice, and Matthews put together, actually it was Rotkin and Fitzmaurice primarily, zoned it out of existence. Even though the neighborhood had no problem with that club except for, I guess, a DA who lived next door and a police officer who was retired who lived across the street. And I've invited, by the way, caller Valerie Correll to comment on this, to call on this, to write on the Internet, to give some kind of response. I have not seen her open to a genuine dialogue on this. And she's still invited, by the way. Valerie, if you're listening, or if any other WHAM members are listening, and caller, I suspect you may be a WHAM member.
I don't believe she can receive the broadcast.
Well, actually, anybody can receive it who has a computer. They can go to www.microradio.net/FRSC and pick us up.
You might be able to do it that way.
Yeah. A lot of people do that.
I hope we stay around for a long time.
Yeah, me too.
Well, talk with you guys later.
Hey, thank you. So, that's... Actually, I recognize that as the voice of another broadcaster. He broadcasts some pretty interesting stuff, particularly if you like kind of audio fiction, if he's still doing the same stuff he used to be doing. And keep it up. I hope we one of the things about this station is we present not just a variety of dissenting political views, most of them on the left. If you want your right-wing Nazi stuff, the Collective doesn't go for that, I got to tell you right now. Libertarianism, I'm not sure. I don't know how the Collective would regard a libertarian perspective. Again, I think we have some libertarians around. But there's also a lot of music you don't hear elsewhere. Some of the music I'd rather not hear at all, but that's beside the point. And a lot of kind of interesting interviews and perspectives that just you're not going to get on our commercial or so-called public, which isn't really on commercial radio. It's kind of, I call it problem radio. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM. Going to continue this discussion. And I think what I'm going to do is I am going to go back to a bit more of this discussion of the federal trial, which was successful, I think, as far as it went, though they haven't gotten a final ruling, of Amy Courtney and Cassandra Brown's attempt to make sure Caltrans does not suppress dissenting views, if it's going to allow Bush propaganda on the overpasses, then it's got to allow those who wish to dissent from Bush propaganda. And we're going to hear some more about how that trial, which took a couple of days in San Jose and was in the court of Judge White, went. Judge White, unfortunately, is the same judge who found against me in my case in Santa Cruz. We're appealing that decision. That was the decision about whether it is considered, whether the city is liable for a civil lawsuit on false arrest for arresting me for silently and briefly raising my arm in a symbol that indicates you're acting like a bunch of fascists to the city council. And we're pursuing that, and I'm going to give you a report on that probably next time or maybe next week on where we are with that appeal. I also have good news of a sort. As some of you who listen to the station regularly may know, I was arrested on November 4th in Santa Cruz City Hall's, well, the city manager's conference room, where we were having a meeting open to the public of a subcommittee created by the city council and by its appointed group, the Downtown Commission, the Downtown Issues Working Group. And I was making an open recording of that, which I almost invariably do, so I can play what the city council legislative legislators do as they kind of proceed, in where if it seems relevant, because a lot of the actions in all legislative bodies happen in at committee levels, and you really got to kind of go in there to have any real input and to see why certain things are chosen and why certain things are not. And as you may remember, the chair of that group, Ed Porter, Pinprick Porter, as I call him, the author of our local Patriot Acts, as I call his anti-homeless downtown laws, told me to turn off the tape recorder. And I said, no, this is a public meeting. I'm not going to turn off the tape recorder. And as a consequence, he had me arrested and charged with disrupting a public meeting. And I learned yesterday, the DA's office didn't inform me, but I had to go find out, finally, that the charges against me were never filed as of 11/22. So 3 weeks ago, there was a decision made in the DA's office that this was all a bunch of, as we would say on free radio, bullshit. And they didn't give me the courtesy of telling me. And this story never appeared in the Santa Cruz Sentinel or any of the local media, though they knew about it, though they knew that a reporter was arrested and barred from a meeting. They took no action in solidarity with that reporter, even to let people know that it was happening. Some would say that this indicates how marginalized I am, how much some people think I'm a wild and crazy guy. Let's see what this caller thinks. Hi, you're on. Try again, caller. I think we just missed you. If you try again, we'll be able to hook you in here. You're really appreciate the wide variety of calls tonight, although it's too bad it has to be provoked by a major threat. I guess that's the psychology of the Bush administration. They create a major threat, and they get lots of support and action and fervor and that sort of thing. And maybe we should declare our own threats at Free Radio and get some more support. Unfortunately, this isn't a threat we've declared. The FCC has, in fact, closed down Free Radio up in Berkeley. I guess it's called Liberation Radio. And hoping to get a report on that from the long hall where there's a meeting tonight of folks who are trying to decide what to do next. But they may not be able to call us, or we may not be able to reach them, or they may not have been made any they may not have made any decisions as of yet. So hang with us, and let's hear a little bit more about, again, an issue that was happening last month that's still with us that has to do with a really, actually, successful free speech recovery where two women sued to get back the right to hang up dissenting views on overpasses. And actually, not only did they get that right back, but they exercised it. I think it lasted longer than the first time, but they still have not been able to get to keep their banners. I call them the bedsheet bandistas. Let's hear some more about the discussion of that trial, which I recorded on a Peace Friday, I think it was three Fridays ago or so.
Really, he didn't treat you right, huh?
Oh, he dismissed the entire case. Apparently the public, you may be able to put a message up on an overpass, but if you raise your hand in a silent gesture at city council, you could be arrested.
Too bad.
So, well, we'll see. It's being appealed. But anyway, so how did this, how long did this, how many hours were you in court?
We were in court from about 1 to 5 on Monday and 2 to 5 on Tuesday. So it was about 8 hours, 8 long hours of Kafka-esque Caltrans witnesses. It wasn't our fault. We don't know about the policy. There's a difference between a policy in writing and a practice. Was this a practice or was it a policy? It was really very actually absurd and hilarious, really.
And so, did you have any witnesses?
Just the two of us were the witnesses, actually. And I think we had some Caltrans witnesses as well, but they sort of blended into each other.
What did you testify?
I didn't get to testify for very long, but I told about how when the war started in Afghanistan, it was the war, and how we felt really silenced, and we saw flags up on overpasses, and we didn't feel like our message was being out there, was being put out there, and we felt excluded from the message that was being pushed. And so we decided to put our message up. And then the judge said, Amy went before I did, and the judge said, is she going to be any different than the first one? And can we just stipulate her? I mean, basically, he said, so I got stipulated.
So, but you said that the other witnesses took up a lot of time on the other side?
Yes.
What were they testifying to?
Random ass crazy shit. And I'm glad it's on free radio because I can say this.
What kind of random crazy shit?
Oh, that whole thing about how many times have you seen a flag before September 11th? And then, oh, what's the response time when you see a flag versus the response time when you see a symbol versus the response time when you see printed messages?
The implication being that it's more dangerous to have non-flags on overpasses.
Right, right.
Did they prove it? They brought in expert witnesses, psychologists, meteorologists.
No, a traffic engineer.
Paleontologists.
Traffic engineers.
Traffic engineers.
With many years of experience first a civil engineer, a degree at Los Gatos, and then on to high school degree there, and then on to Cal Poly as a civil engineer, and then 13 years in the Caltrans department, knowing much about, watching out for how much response time it takes for a flag and message, other messages.
Did they put anyone under hypnosis and do any kind of elaborate tests?
No. But the funniest thing that happened is Amy said she had talked to Mike Galizio, and who is the Caltrans spokesperson for around here, and the cross-examining lawyer said, "How did you know that was Mike Galizio?" And then she's like, and he's like, "How can you be sure that was him?" Well, he said so on the phone.
Perhaps he was lying.
Yeah, you have to get your social security card number and some kind of mother's maiden name.
Caltrans people in the habit of lying about their identity.
Yes.
So what was the point of mentioning him or his being mentioned?
It was part of the policy versus practice, and whether...
Now, what is the policy versus practice issue?
It's all so wacky. The policy is, after September 11th, there was nothing written, but there was sort of hands-off, and it seemed like it was just we didn't ever say that. Oh, yes, somebody else might have said that. If it wasn't in maintenance, it would be something else, but this is the permit. In the permit, people, we don't do... flags, no, it's against the rules if it's a permit. But then there's the whole practice of the maintenance, people leaving things up and encroachments. We have other encroachments, such as when then somebody dies on the side of the road, they put up things on the side of the road. We don't take those down, and so here's a flag. I mean, it was nonstop crazy, that kind of stuff.
Was there a decision?
No decision, not until January.
I see.
Yeah, that's because the other guy has a trial for...
How many lawyers are on the other side?
One.
And how many lawyers are on your side?
Four.
Really? So they were a little outnumbered. Who were the four lawyers?
Nathan Benjamin, Dana Scruggs from around here, James Wheaton from the First Amendment Project, and David Green from the First Amendment Project.
And then there was you and Amy hanging out.
And then, all those lawyers didn't show up. It was only the two lawyers from here that showed up, and then the other two lawyers visited. But they've worked on the case.
And how about the audience? Was there much audience there for this?
The audience was the three ladies that you see behind you, and that was pretty much it.
No Caltrans supporters?
No Caltrans supporters, and in fact, no Caltrans, sitting next to the table. He jokingly said, I'll put the... He had the manuals, pulled out, the Caltrans manuals. Depressing. The man had to, defend the manuals.
And what did the manuals say that he was defending?
I don't know. Republican, redneck... I shouldn't say redneck.
U.S. flags only.
Yeah, exactly. The regime... politic, I don't know. That's what he was supporting.
Well, so on what date do we get the final decision?
January 12th, I think. I'm not sure on that.
We'll be rooting for you, Anna. No doubt it'll be another 30-page spread in the good time.
You know, media craziness.
Hey, thank you, Cassandra.
Thank you, Rob.
Cassandra Brown, a freedom fighter in modern-day America.
Thanks.
Thank you. She's explaining this to her associate.
Okay. As long as it was political, without getting a permit, we wouldn't need a permit.
What do you mean you could get billboards? Space?
We could build a billboard on a space near the freeway. And that We wouldn't need a permit for it. We could just build a billboard and put our message up there.
Really?
Which is exactly contrary to what he had said in the deposition, and probably completely wrong.
Well, why didn't you say it?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, totally weird.
And so it impeached his credibility. His credibility, yeah, so that he lost that witness,
okay.
too. So that was one. And then there was another guy who was just like Mr. Toupee Kavanaugh, saying things like, this is the way we do business. You know, it was like, yeah.
We know that. We know the way they do business.
No. Yeah, exactly. And like trying to like fluff it off on somebody else. Just like hide behind the bureaucracy.
So what did he mean that's the way they do business? What is that supposed to mean?
He was talking about leaving the flag up or something else. It was like, I think it was leaving the flag up. That's just the way we do business.
That's the practice.
Yeah. But also not, like, not copying to at all, trying to get out of saying that Caltrans was leaving flags up at all. You know, so he was just like, or that there was any kind of decision made in the department. At all. He was just like, no, you know, it was like, oh, maybe we've had that email. I don't remember. Oh, yeah, I guess my name's on it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't really recall. Yeah, that's just the way we do business, that kind of thing. You know, like it sort of, did you recall somebody on that day and tell them about that? Well, maybe I talked to that. And it was the Iranian guy. I'm sorry.
So the bottom line of it is what? The judge is going to make his decision?
In January.
January.
It's a long time, huh?
So what is the lawyer
do? They are like, they're very positive. They think that they probably won.
So in this situation, what does winning mean?
It means we get the injunction and nothing.
Okay,
and,
so
and
nothing goes up.
Yeah.
No flags, no nothing.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The true victory would be if we could all have our messages up.
Hey, isn't that what democracy is about?
But it's not likely for the safety reason.
Yeah.
It is for safety and national security reasons.
Exactly. We cannot leave that stuff up. It's might make you think.
It could be a lethal weapon. You know, when we went to Sacramento, they wouldn't let us take these signs into the building.
Oh, God.
Because you might... Start
might attack
people.
The legislators.
Oh, you know.
Good idea.
Hey, I hadn't thought about that.
Wow.
Wow.
No.
And that was Amy Courtney and a number of associates standing on the corner of Water and Pacific on a Peace Friday, which is coming up again tomorrow, although it may be raining. Get your umbrellas ready. Got to be ready to go out there in the rain to stop the war. I don't know if I'm going to be ready to do that, but I'm advising you to, and I'm advising me to, too. There's also going to be, that's going to be at 4 o'clock tomorrow at Ocean and Water Streets. Then on Saturday, Peace Saturday will be held, I think, as I understand it, noon at Cooper and Pacific, which is right across from the Cinema 9, where Merry Mondays has been held for the last few months, and also noon at the Capitola, 41st Avenue and Claire Mall entrance. Capitola Mall entrance. That's noon. Two demonstrations on Saturday, day after tomorrow. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My producer has informed me she has been unable to get through to the long hall. She's left some messages in Berkeley. That's the place where Berkeley activists are meeting to discuss an emergency session, the closing down of Liberation Radio Berkeley by the FCC in a raid yesterday morning. And we've talked about that earlier in the show. And there is an emergency alert. We've gone to red, purple, green, and black alert here at Free Radio. We've alerted Tom Ridge to send in troops to assist us in defending from the kind of corporate lunatics who are likely to try to destroy the voice of Free Radio. But frankly, we don't know if the Office of Homeland Security is going to respond in sufficient time. So we have to rely on the community instead. That means you. If you want to help Free Radio Santa Cruz stay on the air, volunteer to join the phone tree, volunteer to come on down with a video camera or an audio, volunteer to write a letter, volunteer to send some money because we may need to replace equipment fast. And that number to call to leave your name, your address, whatever, your thoughts is 427-4523, 427-4523. If you're out of the area, it's 831-427-4523. So you can do that. And do it. Why not? Continuing with some interviews on the street, I had hoped this evening to be able to give a kind of an update on the Downtown Commission, the death of the Downtown Commission, I should say, which worked for so many months. I've been ridiculing them because I think that they were wasting their time, and unfortunately I was proven to be right. All their work was essentially thrown out the door and out the window by Riley Porter and the other members of the City Council, who proved to be just as bad, if not worse, than those two that gave us the downtown ordinances of 2002. The no hacky sacking, no bubble blowing, don't leave a backpack unattended, even if it's not blocking the sidewalk, or we'll steal it, and to boot, charge you with a $162 crime. That's how it runs in Santa Cruz these days as the gentrification forces move into full winter bloom, the bloom of the nightshade forces. Lots of interesting stuff on the Internet back and forth with street performers who had formed a group talking about how to approach the city council, how to work out problems with the merchants. They essentially also have been slapped across the chops. The voluntary guidelines have been shot through the head. Those are the guidelines that said street performers would kind of agree among themselves to move on after an hour if there was a complaint or another street performer wanted the place. Not as any kind of hard and fast rule, but just a general understanding. The city council passed several resolutions, and I wanted to have the exact wording before I discussed it. In fact, I think I'm going to discuss it on Sunday in greater detail. But I can look at this online and see what I can find. The action agenda is coming out late. That's what tells you what happened at the Tuesday City Council meeting. It's kind of a written record of what happened. And it is it was only available today, and I had hoped to pick it up, and the person who was going to deliver it to me has not showed up. And I kind of hope that maybe I can find something on the Internet, and there's a very good discussion back and forth. What we need, of course, is to form strong political opposition to raise the roof here in an effective way, which is always problematic. Now, there's, I guess I can kind of summarize what my understanding of, and my understanding is limited because it was about 11:30 or 12 at night when the last few things were passed that were done rather quickly. And I'm trying to see what is a cooking here as I try to ramble through this. The current state of the law is as follows. There are the anti-homeless, anti-performer ordinances that were put into effect in 1994 by Rotkin, Matthews, and Kennedy. And those actually would have killed the voluntary street performers guidelines had they been enforced, but they were not enforced for street performers. They had things like you can't play in front of a street cafe at all, ever. You can't stand in front of a building within 6 feet of a building ever at all if you're in any way taking in money, soliciting money. And then they had space limits that were such as 6 feet from a building, 4 feet from a bench, 4 feet from a drinking fountain, 10 feet from a crosswalk, I think it's 10 feet from a kiosk. All these distances were forbidden zones for street performers and political activists with display devices if they were engaging in any kind of solicitation of money. And solicitation of money did not mean there's a kind of a strange definition of solicitation in another ordinance that was kind of worked around to help out street performers, where an open guitar case doesn't mean soliciting money, according to the summer ruling or the summer wording or the fall wording of that ordinance. Solicitation of money may mean solicitation of money. So if a person is performing primarily to get funds, and he's offered funds, that's considered soliciting. So you don't have to have a display device. All you have to do is be standing within 6 feet of a building, and you're illegal, according to this 1994 ordinance. But it wasn't enforced. Instead, it was they enforced use other things, like excessive noise, disturbing the peace, blocking the sidewalk, and whatever Alibaba says goes. He was the owner of Alibaba's cafe, and probably had more citizens' arrests made of people than everybody else on the mall put together, although I speak out of ignorance and to some extent out of prejudice here, although I think I have good reason to make the kind of statement I do. In any case, in the summer of 2002, Riley came forward, along with Porter, after some show hearings that actually took in evidence somewhat similar to the downtown commission hearings that followed, which then was ignored by the city council. The real problems were vandalism, violence, abusive drug sales and use, hostile rudeness. And instead of proposing some solutions to these problems, which wouldn't be easy, but which might involve a lot of public meetings and public process and mediating and signage and all kinds of things, the Ed Porter treat the whole downtown mall like your high school corridor approach was used instead. And they decided they were just going to start ordering people around and give the police the power to order people around. Actually, the police have been ordering people around earlier in the year, and actually they've been ordering people around for years, as we know, in terms of particularly poor people. That was one of the reasons of the original 1994 downtown ordinances, which not only involved what I just said, but also involved a 10-foot forbidden zone for sitting and for spare changing, even if you were peaceful, and even if you were sitting in a place that didn't bother anybody. And the police, in essence, were given a blank check to go up and harass people they didn't like the look of, and to that you can't sit here, you can't sit there, and that sort of thing. The street performers were, what Emily Riley so discreetly likes to call it in her Smiley Riley language, an unintended consequence. Actually, they were a sacrificial lamb, because in order to get rid of homeless people that they don't want cluttering up the downtown, or youth that they consider problems if they gather in groups, they have to apply a uniform standard or the law will not be constitutional. If it reaches the courts. It actually has never really gotten to the courts in that way. One of the laws did, the original you can't sit anywhere laws, and it was thrown out. Kennedy and Rotkin immediately came back with a 10-foot you can't sit from a building law, which didn't really reach any high constitutional challenge. And none of these laws have been taken up by the ACLU or the other great civil liberties defenders in our town, which is regrettable. I think they should have been. I think they still can be. Anyway, street performers, as I say, were not an unintended consequence. They were a sacrificial lamb. As Rotkin well knew when the laws were passed in 94, when the worst laws were passed, extending the 6-foot forbidden zone, which the city council kept misstating as a 10-foot forbidden zone last Tuesday, when that was extended to 14 feet in the latest laws, as I said, the street performers were essentially kind of added to the group, because you can't really exempt one group of people on the basis of content, the content of their soliciting, the content of their songs. You can't say it's okay for a guy to strum his guitar and ask for money, but it's not okay for another person to sit there with a cup silently and with a sign and ask for money, which is exactly what the current laws say. That's the current situation right now. As of today, December 12, 2002. It is illegal to sit with a cup 13 feet from a building, but it's perfectly legal to sit with a guitar in a cup 13 feet from a building. However, you might say, well, why don't all panhandlers just grab harmonicas and hit the streets? They did. They tried. And what police have done is they become even more selectively harassing. They go after people that they say, you're not a real performer. They become, see, the police as art critics. I love it. The police as music critics. The police as the arbiters, not just of public safety, but of public good taste and what constitutes good music. This is the new regime, the new order in Santa Cruz. This is what Riley and Porter, and now with a vengeance, Matthews and Rotkin and Kennedy are giving us and gave us on Tuesday. So, as I said, the street performers were a sacrificial lamb. A lot of people would prefer to keep the street performers, even among the merchants who want to, you know, not in front of my shop, but okay, up the street perhaps. They were still willing to have street performers around, but if that meant that they would also have to have poor and homeless people there, you know, and the sidewalks would actually have to be public, once Kennedy decided to sell out to that group of people, that's then Mayor Kennedy in 1994, previously a liberal, who then decided it was a better deal, a better idea, there was more power or more sense or more force or whatever there was. You got to talk to Kennedy about it, in, you know, shaking hands with the merchants and doing a deal with them to give up the civil rights of the homeless community and the poor and the poverty community to use the public spaces as the rest of us do, and institute these laws that don't criminalize bad behavior. They criminalize location. They criminalize presence on the sidewalk. They are intrinsically not enforceable unless they're selectively enforced, because you can't arrest everybody for doing this. You can't even warn everybody. There's no time. So And you can't expect people to abide by this on the Santa Cruz Mall unless you want to radically change the face of the mall, not have people sitting down, not have people lingering and playing, not have people peacefully asking for spare change. Yeah, these are hard times. Yeah, it is cold outside. And yeah, sometimes people get nasty. If they get too nasty, then there are laws for disturbing the peace. There are laws of that sort, too. But, you know, it's a real world we live in. It's not Disneyland. It's not the Capitola Mall. It's not Carmel. It is the real world in Santa Cruz. Perhaps not as real as San Francisco or as New York City in some respects, not as gritty and down to earth there. But the idea that real problems should be visible is something that politicians don't like and merchants like even less. They want to clear them all out of sight. That was the reason that the Homeless Resource Center was built. It wasn't really built to help homeless people. It was built to get them the fuck out of town. And see, people like Steve Hartman felt that they weren't pushed far enough out of town. He's complained about that on KSCO to his discredit. There's been no attempt to get real shelter for homeless people or set up real campgrounds, which the city could do at a very small cost compared with, let's say, the $7 million cost overrun for a $5 or $6 million police station that they just gladly smile, or the huge, fat police budget that they vote for while they're cutting everything else. I mean, this is part of the national mentality, which is give everything to the cops, give everything to the sort of military mentality, bombs, not food, and, then you'll get reelected next time. You know, then you can show how tough you are. I mean, that's what this whole crazy round on the street performers has been, because, and it's also, of course, very counterproductive, has been repeatedly pointed out by street performers and others, because street performers draw people to Santa Cruz. I suppose if you want to draw a different, more conservative segment to town, you get rid of those things that make Santa Cruz unique, and you can do that. I don't know how successful it is. I'm not really a merchandiser. I can't tell you whether that would work. It's certainly not a community that I really want to be a part of, and it's the community that's being created downtown, and that's why I'm fighting it. I think it is a horrible idea. And I think a lot of people agree with me. And I think if everyone who agreed got their butts downtown regularly, I don't really think the jails could hold us, frankly, not in Santa Cruz. And I don't think that the public opinion would support city council and police action on the level that would go if we did it. I could be wrong, but I think that would work. The trouble is, of course, people are working two jobs. Nobody wants to risk getting arrested for numerous reasons. And are very few. I'm one of the few, and there are some others at different points to do. But to get the critical mass together is really difficult. Anyway, this whole monologue began with a discussion of what happened on Tuesday night. What did they do in City Council? And what they did was, they were presented with a recommendation from the Downtown Commission that essentially said, keep the 1994 law for street performers and for tablers, which says something to the effect of, as I mentioned before, you have these stupid limits that aren't good, that are simply there to help gentrify the town and give the merchants more control over the sidewalks. You can't play or set up a table 6 feet from a building unless, of course, you're a police officer. We've talked about that before on this station, so the selective use of these laws. But now, what happened this summer was that whole thing was expanded to 14 feet, which eliminates 95% of the sidewalks for performing and for political tabling. So the Downtown Commission recommended... let me step back a step here. The 14-foot forbidden zone was passed, but then suddenly in September, the council put it on hold for 4 or 5 months to give the Downtown Commission time to work on it. By January 15th, the 14-foot limit would return. The 14-foot forbidden zones will return. And the Downtown Commission was expected to, come up with things like exemption zones, I don't know, you can go play in this. You can float in the air and play, so maybe that would be okay. I'm being somewhat ludicrous because there is no answer other than to dump these laws and to look at real behavioral problems, not what pleases the merchants at election time, or that sort of thing. So the Downtown Commission said, keep the old law if you need to, but really look at the issue of the voluntary street performers regulating themselves. They really did that successfully before. There are very, very few complaints about street performers, and there's no real justification for this change in the law, as there isn't really any real justification for the 1994 law, but, because, politically possible, keep the 94 law. And also, you know, we'll have a bunch of street performers who are spreading out these voluntary guidelines to other new street performers, talking about them, talking to merchants, reporting to the downtown commission. The downtown commission is going to report on the whole situation and keep it under control, work with it. Everybody's going to get involved and solve any problems that do arise. Well, what did the city council do? Cynthia Matthews rolled out a program that she had obviously written beforehand, in which she essentially ignored what the downtown commission said, except to say, no, won't work. What we want to do is make musicians move on every hour. Make them move on. Don't suggest it as a voluntary agreement that people do because they, you know, they want to cooperate. And if they don't want to cooperate, you know, the forces of peer pressure will operate. And there are other things that can happen, too. It hasn't been a major problem. There's no documentation that street performers generally stay for long periods of time. And if they do, and the merchants have had the power to use other laws. That's been my point, and the point that this not, and then the downtown commission acknowledged that as well. So did the street performers, but the city council paid no attention to that. So the city council wants to mandate a one-hour move-along time, so that not just for street performers, but for political tablers. If you're a political table, you'll only be able to put a table up there for an hour. And they want to expand the forbidden zone from the current 6 feet, 4 feet, 6 feet from a building, 4 feet from a telephone or bench, 10 feet from a crosswalk to it, 10 feet all over, allegedly in the interest of consistency. And this is hogwash, because a part of the law says the police officer has to warn you anyway. And if you look at the sidewalk, you see squares. Each large square in the sidewalk is approximately 2 feet. This is actually mentioned in the police department literature, which you can get from the hosts, the office next to the Del Mar Theater, the Downtown Informant Center, or Snitch Central, as we like to call it. So there isn't really that much confusion about this. There was no real documentation that there was confusion. This was a way of covering a draconian, repressive expansion of these laws. They are, in essence, doubling the forbidden space by moving it from 6 feet to 10 feet for musicians. Now, it was heralded by the Mercury News and Dan White today in the paper, if you looked at it, as some kind of big victory for street performers, big compromise, big concession, which is ridiculous. And if you ask any street performer, I think they'll tell you the same thing. At least the street performers there, that was the impression I got from them. The victory would have been, had they, and it would have been actually just returning to ground zero again, returning to where you started from before they moved in with their police harassment, with their move-on stuff, with their concocted complaints. That was another thing that came out of this. The street performers came forward, as I mentioned on the air before, and pointed out that even conservative, sort of, you know, feel-good, friendly groups like the marimba players, who aren't political activists in the sense that somebody like Phil Free is, or who aren't, you know, the poorer players like Cosmic Chris is, who are, I don't mean poorer in quality, I mean poorer in terms of economic status, who get I think significantly more harassment, who were out there more. But even they were told, when they played in a legal area, not an illegal area, but a legal area in front of O'Neill's last Sunday, that the some female police officer, by the report of two members of that band, came up to the band and said, we've gotten complaints from O'Neill's, you're going to have to move along in 20 minutes. where she got this 20 minutes from, you know, they didn't know. And, you know, they said, okay, so they went into O'Neill's a bit later and they said, you know, we're really sorry about this. And O'Neill said, well, but for what? We didn't complain about anything. And they went, what? And I said, yes. And in fact, the police came in and they made us feel uncomfortable. They told us that we were causing trouble by letting you play out here. So, I mean, there's all kinds of confusion here. The street performance guidelines say, and you tell someone move on in an hour if you can, if you want to be a part of the guidelines. There's no sanction, but it's part of the guideline. And it's something that most performers will do. And I'm sure their marimba players would have done. But that's not what this officer did. The guidelines also, there's no right of a merchant to control the sidewalk in front of their store. They don't have that right. It's a public sidewalk, and they know they don't. And the police know they don't. So what are the police harassing the merchants to harass the street performers, other than simply to create, I have to say it, to create a problem where the police become a viable force, where it, you know, in essence, it furthers the political agenda. The political decision of the police department is we want these laws because they help us, they give us more power to deal with problems as they arise, just like they like the sleeping ban because it's a, quote, useful tool to deal with homeless people. I mean, if you have a law that makes it illegal for a person to sleep after 11 o'clock at night under penalty of $54 fine on any public property, as we do in Santa Cruz, that means if a person falls asleep, you can search them, you can interrogate them, you can arrest them, you can move them on, you can pat them down without worrying about probable cause. You have probable cause because it's illegal to sleep. It's absurd, it's unconstitutional, it violates the UN Charter, but nonetheless, our local judge, Tom Kelly, Kangaroo Kelly, as I've mentioned it before, as I've called him, says, well, they can sleep during the day, can't they? So it's not really unconstitutional. Anyway, that is why the police want more power for one reason or another. Police officials think it's a good idea to have these laws. So apparently the word has gone out, it looks like to me, to the lieutenants and to the watch commanders and to people on the police officers on the beat that they're supposed to crack down on musicians downtown. This actually happened long before, significantly before these laws ever came up from the Candy Jackson petition this summer. It happened in the spring. And I'm not sure why the police made this decision, but they did. And then they wanted the city council to cover their respective butts, and they did with these new laws. Anyway, at the city council meeting on Tuesday night, as I understand it, there were three things passed. The first was no more voluntary guidelines. There'll be a mandatory move along for 100 feet down the street every hour for all street performers and all political tablers. That's number one. Number two, there'll be a 10-foot forbidden zone from everything for all street performers and all tablers. This is what the Mercury News and the Sentinel called some kind of victory for the street performers. It's no victory at all. It's a major defeat because the street performers had won a victory. They'd gotten the downtown commission, the majority of them, 5 out of 7, to say the voluntary street performer guidelines have worked. Why were these changes made? Instead, we propose this, go back to the old law or continue with the old law, because that's what we have, the Rotkin-Matthews-Kennedy old law, which is not very good, but leave it. It's certainly not as bad as the 14-foot law. And instead, work with this process of working with the street performers. So the city council had no interest in that proposal whatsoever. They didn't want to talk about it. All the many hours, dozens of hours spent on that proposal by the downtown commission, by the street performers, was essentially said, no, we don't like that. We'll go on to something else. And they wouldn't even explain why, except for the statement that it's not enforceable. But they didn't show that there were any problems that required enforcement. The idea that everything has to be enforceable, everything is forbidden unless it's permitted, was an idea that's fashionable in some, you know, maybe in Prussia in the 18th century and in Germany in the 30s, or maybe in Honduras in the 70s, but it's not something for Santa Cruz in 2002. It's just not. Well, listen, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I guess you are listening if you are listening. This is Robert Norse. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert. This is 96.3 FM. I hope I'm talking loud enough here. I think my levels are a little low, so I better speak up here. And the phone number to call if you want to join this discussion is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. There was also a third item passed, and that was a redefinition of soliciting in the solicitation ordinance. And possibly in the non-commercial display ordinance. And why I'm distinguishing them is I've been reading them carefully, and I kind of know what I'm talking about. It's hard for you out there to know if you don't have them in front of you. They were trying to define it so that a street performer playing for money is not soliciting, which, of course, is ridiculous. He is soliciting, or she is soliciting, and she should have a right to solicit. So should a person with a little cup, provided they're not abusively soliciting. And that's the only part of the 1994 ordinances and the 2002 ordinances that should be kept, where there's abusive solicitation. The idea that the merchants own the sidewalks or that the police should be given the power to act as though the merchants own the sidewalks is just wrong. It's wrong constitutionally. It's wrong morally. I don't think it works economically either, particularly in Santa Cruz. And it's certainly wrong in terms of the spiritual climate of our town, or what has been the spiritual climate of our town, although we have a definite spiritual malaise here. Also, there was some legal hanky-panky going on. The city attorney, there were actually no laws actually being really presented to the public before we walked into that meeting, so no laws could really have a first reading. And under the legal process, for those who don't know, if you pass a new law, you have to publish it 72 hours in advance of your city council meeting. Then it has to pass by a majority. Then it has to be published again in the same form 72 hours before another city council meeting, which is usually 2 weeks down the road, and then passed again. Then it goes into effect a month after that. That's the normal process. Now, if they want to get some emergency law passed, they have to make an emergency finding. They don't have to publish it in advance. They can do it on the spot. And they have to have a 5-2 vote at least. So that's what they're really going to do next time. They're going to pass this as an emergency law. That's my suspicion. That's their process. They're claiming it's a normal process, but it's not. They're using an emergency process. And what's bad here is that the normal process has been through the Downtown Commission, which has shown that the laws they're proposing, Downtown Commission hasn't looked at at all. The city council just sort of threw this stuff around, made it up as they went, and put it together, and then said, we don't want to hear too much more about this. Well, of course, what we need to do out there is make them hear a hell of a lot more about it, every day, downtown, continually, until we get a little sense returning to the mall. And actually, Christmas is the right time to do it. But Christmas is the time when the merchants depend upon shopping downtown. And my suggestion, as I come to think of it, and I sit here in the studio now, is to suggest that street performers and activists of all shades recommend a boycott downtown. Merchants who support a return to the voluntary street performers' guidelines and an end to the downtown ordinances, except insofar as they apply to abusive behavior, shop there and spend your money there. If they don't spend your money there. And I think that raising this specter of basic constitutional rights being taken away is something that a lot of people who are liberal Democrats and even some people who are libertarian Republicans are sensitive to, and certainly people who are Greens, with the exception of phony Greens like Tim Fitzmaurice on the city council who voted for this, and I think they'll listen. So my suggestion is think about starting to mass protest now. And there are some that say, well, let's talk to the merchants, let's all sit down and, you know, have a hug fest. I like hug fests. I mean, I'm an amiable person in spite of the sharp rhetoric I sometimes come out with, although I think what I say is fair. But you're here at a strategic moment. The city council has shown it does not give a shit what their own commission says. It doesn't care about the street performer traditions. It doesn't give a damn about police harassment of people downtown. It just simply does not. And people who don't want to recognize this fact are fooling themselves. They really are. And I know that people would like to think it's otherwise. They'd like to think that there's a rational process, but there's not. There's a power happening here. There's a power process, a power trip going on. And that can only be reversed by counterpower, by power from the community. It doesn't have to be violent power, but it has to be strong, persistent, real, visible power. That's my view. If you have a view on this, give a call to 427-3772, 427-3772. FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, while we're still on the air. And I'm kind of running my way through some of these comments on the email. Interesting stuff. Unfortunately, again, I haven't got the documents from the Downtown Commission. Let's hear a little more talk from the streets.
Okay, it's about 1:20, 1:35. We're in front of the China Express talking with
Michael Reyes.
And Michael, it's December 6th, and for the last three nights, you've been at City Hall trying to get some sleep.
I've been camping there, and you know what? I've been woken up every night with Officer Klein and Officer Seeley both explicitly telling me that they would not harm me or any way, but they would say that my life would be a big problem. And they say that they would make me their project. And now I understand what type of project. What type of project are you going to make me? So in other words, they said they were going to harass me, schmooze me, and push me every any which way that they can.
Did they, in essence, tell you that they wanted you to leave that location?
They told me that they would ask me to leave Santa Cruz County.
They said that?
Yes, they
both
did.
Both of them or one
both
one
of
in
them.
Particular?
Both of them said that they want me and my friends to leave Santa Cruz County, which is bullshit. I've been here 15 years.
You have two friends with you at that time?
Yes, I did.
And how? And you're a resident here for 15 years?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I put more money into this community than the tourists put into this community. You know, I get SSI, brother.
Right.
I get
$1,000.
I get $1,000 a month. That's not even topping the other $3,000 or $4,000 I put into this community a month, just buying cookies and, you know, crap and.
What is your disability, Mike?
I'm...
Mental problems?
Psychologically disability.
Okay, I can accept that. And you get $1,000 a month from SSI.
Yeah, and it all goes into Santa Cruz County. I mean, come on.
Well, have they explained to you what their concern is? Are they? Have they gotten complaints, or are they just...
No complaints from me. All they want is me and my people and my friends. Quote unquote, my friends are quote unquote campers and little hippie kids, and we just want you.
Let me speak.
I said we just want you and your type. I don't know what the type is.
Well, let me ask you this: do you consider yourself an alcoholic?
No.
I mean, are you a drinker? Because I candidly speaking,
I party all the time. I party all the time.
There's a strong smell of alcohol.
Now, let me ask you something.
No offense, man.
Do you consider one of your local officers, which is Officer Perry, do you consider him an alcoholic?
I have no idea.
Considering him. He's gotten 5 DWIs. He owns part of the Dakota bar, and yet he is an officer. But yet he's gotten 5 DWIs. He owns a big red Cadillac. He owns a big red hearse. But yet he's got another DWI, which makes 6. But yet he still drives a squad car.
Interesting.
And arrests everybody else. So
the fact of the matter is, whatever your personal situation is, you should not be harassed for sleeping, and you should have the right to be
sleeping
for camping in Santa Cruz.
How about just taking a nap?
There you go. That should not be something you're harassed for, nor should it be.
Hell no.
Nor should you be harassed for.
Hell no.
Simply being a part of this community. It sounds like.
We're taking a nap? Come on, he doesn't take a nap.
Illegal napping
Let
without a permit.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
One night, 1969, that was back in the day.
How old are you, anyway? You don't look that old.
Believe me. Back in the day, 1969, he has a record up there. But I'll tell you what, in 1999, we came out of a place that was called, the Bullet.
Yeah, and I got Silver
that
Bullet?
That was the Silver Bullet,
right,
where the new garage is.
Right.
We came outside. There was a black man laying in a puddle of water. He was drowning. He was drowning, literally drowning. We picked him up, flipped him over, and who was it? It was Officer Perry. We saved his life.
Thank you.
And then 2 hours later, we got arrested for drunk in public. And who arrested us?
Officer Perry.
Officer Perry, the same man that we pulled out of that fucking pond of water that we saved his ass from. And you know what? That's on record. Check it. It's on public record.
Wow. So are you going to be filing a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board about this incident?
I'm filing a fucking suit.
Okay, that's even better if you can find
an attorney. I'm filing a suit. What are you kidding? I'm filing a fucking civil suit big time.
Okay.
I tried to talk to you last night. Remember, you wouldn't talk to me last night.
2 nights ago. I was incognito.
Yeah.
No, that's what you said. You said I was incognito, but actually, it wasn't I wouldn't talk to you. It's I was trying to talk to other people. I don't mind talking to you. as you can see.
That's the truth. And that's the truth.
Anything you want to add for the free radio folks?
Just bullshit, man. I mean, I'm not trying to get all weird on everybody or anything. I mean,
you just don't want to be, you want to be able to take a nap without.
I want to relax, bro. I want to hang out in the park. I want to relax, you know. Excuse me, marijuana's free now, so I want to smoke a fatty and just kick back. Yeah, I'm a cancer patient and everything else, so.
Do you have your medical marijuana card?
Yes, I do.
Can I see it?
Yes,
he's going to show me his medical marijuana card. We're going to be sure that there's no bullshit going down here.
There's no bullshit at all.
And he's checking his wallet. There's his library card, Social Security card, numerous other cards.
Hold on.
The man is finding his card. And take your time. It's kind of a, the rainy weather has kind of arrived, although it's just been sprinkles. Here we go.
They gave me my new ID, my California card. They said I can use this card for my marijuana card. You can see the date, date issued.
This is a state of California benefits identification card
and the
for
day.
Ronaldo Reyes.
Yes, it is.
And you were born in 1964. You're younger than I am.
That's straight.
You're just a youngster.
Yes, I am.
Well, think of you as a younger brother, perhaps.
Well, I'm real. I'm real, man.
And you're on the air with Free Radio. Hello? Caller? Are you there? Hello? Try calling back. We interrupted that rather lengthy street interview because we had a phone call, but... looks like we lost the caller. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Still on the air in spite of the demise, or at least temporary suppression, of our sister station, or some say stepsister station up in Berkeley, Liberation Radio Berkeley, which was raided on Wednesday. Not good, but we're still here, and we need your help. If you want to be a part of a support network for Free Radio Santa Cruz, do give a call to 427-4523. Leave your name and number. And if you've got a tape recorder, you want to come down, you're willing to witness problems as they arise. If the police do attempt to break in, the FCC does attempt to break into the station and confiscate our equipment, steal our ancient cassettes, and make off with our puny but mighty telephone here, you will be there, hopefully, videoing it with your camcorders, if you have any out there, all you loyal Free Radio listeners. Wow. I'm ever hopeful, because there was certainly a lot of phone calling earlier, though many of those calls were, of course, from Free Radio broadcasters. But, hey, we kept the station running for 8 years, and hopefully it'll keep running for another 8 years at least. If we can keep the world running for another 8 months, I think we'll be doing pretty good. That's an issue, too. I encourage people to come down to the Peace Friday tomorrow at 4. I encourage people to think about a real 24-hour vigil downtown where we could start mobilizing people to do things. I know that my old pal Stop the War Santa, or Peace Santa, as he's sometimes called, has a word here. Let me first get this word from the... Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey there.
How's it going?
Good. Do you want to talk to me, or do you want to talk to a Peace Santa? Here, let me talk to a Peace Santa. Santa, come over here.
Oh, you want to talk to me?
Hello. Yes?
I was at the city council meeting for part of the time, but then later on that evening, I watched the late hours of the meeting on TV. And just before they voted on their changing from 14 to 10 foot, Emily Riley was, well, if we're just going to change this around, why don't we just go back to the 94 ordinance? I'd be more willing to vote for that than for the 10 foot.
Well, yes, I remember that, Scott. I can't say I clearly remember it. I think I vaguely remember it, but I remember that she went along with the 10-foot anyway. I mean, some council members said some good things, like Scott Kennedy at one point said, you know, we're not supposed to, you know, give all this over for regulation. We're supposed to send it back to the street performers and have them work it out. But then he also turned around and voted for these bad amendments. And similarly, Rotkin was saying things like, well, you know, we have to have a uniform standard, but then he voted for Barisoni's amendment, which said, define solicitation for street performers as a special group, not to be solicitation.
Right.
So it's a strange...
this 10-foot rule only applies to street performers and tablers. It doesn't... The panhandlers and everybody else, if you're sitting down or whatever, you still have to be 14 foot away.
Which removes 95% of the sidewalk.
Right, which, I mean, to me, still opens the whole thing up to a constitutional lawsuit. If somebody that gets busted for panhandling wants to do it, you know, I mean, if they're 10 feet from a building instead of 14, then they could go to court and say, well, why is this activity more protected than some other activity, you know?
Yeah, that, of course, is the very reason that they included, as I was mentioning, street performers and political tablers in the first place.
Right, but the fact that they have two different things
right
now. They have a 14-foot rule and a 10-foot rule.
Well, remember that they had two different rules before. They had a 10-foot rule for sitters, and then they had a 6-foot rule for tablers. And it might well still be, as you pointed out, unconstitutional, but no one has challenged it on that basis.
Right.
Partially because we can't find a civil liberties lawyer in 100 miles who's interested in homeless people and has the time and interest and finances to do it. So, there are a couple other things that happened in city council you might want to comment on. One was, we talked about this, I called into KSCO today, and I mentioned this earlier on the air, the deputization of Valerie and Mike Corral as the sheriffs in the medical marijuana feud, you know? What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I don't know if that does anything for them at all, because first of all, the city of Santa Cruz does not have deputies. The county has deputies. The city has regular police officers. They didn't make them police officers. They made them deputies. They should have went to the county and became deputies, not the city. I don't know what this does for them at all. I mean, the whole law that they're trying to cite is to give them legitimization. Is that, you know, if you're an undercover cop, you can carry drugs on you. You can actually sell drugs as part of being your undercover work. And there's actually a state law that allows you to do that. And so that, you know, that would, under that law, then they could carry drugs with them. Distribute drugs, even, but you know, it's not part of police work, and I'm sure that, you know, that would come up if they were prosecuted, you know, for their work as deputized people. That would come up. You're not doing police work. You know, that would be the big argument that would be made by the prosecution, is you're not involved in police work, and that's what the state law covers, is undercover police. It doesn't cover, you know, pharmacists that decide, oh, well, even though morphine is a controlled substance, this old lady's in really bad pain, so I'm going to give her morphine without a prescription. You know, it doesn't cover that kind of stuff, you know. So it's like, I don't know, I think it's all a pipe dream, so to say.
Well, puff on my pipe. Well, of course, my criticism is that this is more sort of special pleading for Valerie and Mike's Wham. A group as good as far as it goes, but it only covers 5 to 10% of the people in the city who need.
Well, see, the other thing is, too, is that Wham, you know, under the current guidelines that the city has in their planning department and their zoning ordinances, Wham can't even set up shop. They can't even have an office anywhere in town. I mean, they hold their meetings at Loud Nelson because they have a collective meeting, you know, and they have a meeting once a month or something at the Loud Nelson. But it's like, you know, they don't distribute marijuana there or do any of that kind of stuff. And they can't, you know. Under the zoning laws that exist in this town, there's really no place where anybody can open up a place to do that.
Have you actually looked at that? Because what I understand is that there is a corridor along Soquel Avenue and perhaps Mission Street where, you know, it's theoretically you could open up a club. It's just very onerous and difficult, and the kinds of problems that have arisen in the past make it financially, according to Kay Wells and several other people, impossible to do that. I have not, you know, done a close word-by-word study of the ordinance. Have you looked at the ordinance?
Yeah, well, on Soquel, I think, I mean, the same problem arises on Mission Street is there's, you know, right up against the business district, behind every one of those businesses is houses. And you got to be a certain distance from a residence. And I'd say, you know, at least 95% of the businesses on both Soquel and Mission are too close to any residents to be able to actually open up a medical marijuana distribution point. You know, it'd be like there might be like one building somewhere on Mission Street, one building somewhere on Soquel that, you know, would qualify under this law, you know. And
Sorry, the FCC is here. We're going to have to let Inspector Uncle Dennis take over here.
Oh, okay.
He's confiscating my property and moving me on. Caller, thank you for the analysis. I would like to sit down with you and in this law and get, you know, the surety of really kind of seeing this for myself.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you later, Robert.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Yep, bye.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. I want to thank the many callers. Apologize for the idiots in the federal government who are prompting all these calls. And encourage you to keep this station running. I mean, it's probably the best station in the area, frankly. I mean, we sometimes aren't as smooth or as polished. Well, we're generally not as smooth or as polished as the mainstream stations and the public radio stations. But if you want to talk on the air and if you want to hear stuff worth listening, we're way up there. I'm going to play a little bit of Rich Little, Shades of the Past, as Uncle Dennis sets up. In the meantime, between now and the next show, you can call me at 423-HUFF. You can rejoin me at 10 o'clock on Sunday for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And pop out for Peace Friday at 4 o'clock tomorrow. I can assure you that Stop the War Santa we'll be there.
You know, I've been studying old films for years. I love them, and that's how an impressionist learns to do impressions. Well, after seeing so many old films so many times, I got kind of thinking about doing one myself, like a Western. Now, I've always wanted to do a great old Western with a big train robbery in it. Let's round up some real Western types. Walter Brennan, Kurt Douglas, Burt Lancaster, Gary Cooper, James Arness, Glenn Ford, and a little local color from my old pal, Henry Funk. Well, sir, it was in the winter of 78 when me and Ephraim, Virgil, Wyatt, Twilly, and Toop was riding the Oregon Trail between Chisholm and where Three Rivers meet in Broken Spur. My pa, Coley, was chasing wild pigs up at Salt Ridge between Carson City and Medicine Hat. He got snake bite. Well, he spent the rest of the winter sucking his leg in a cave. When he come out, a hungry Pawnee bit off the hang-me-down part of his left ear. Later, he went near mad from black fly bites up near Parsons Notch, spent the rest of the summer getting leached and wondering where his next bite was coming from. Well, then me and the boys rode into Clampertville and come out with four sticks of dynamite Crazy Doc Dawson had thrown into a pot on the last hand of a game of seven-toed Pete. So we moseyed on down to the tracks to rob the Santa Fe. All right, get ready. Here comes the train just a clickety-clackety-clackety-clicking down the track.
I know what you're coming, Gord, dang it. All them trains go clickety-clackety-clackety-click. Now get your guns ready.
Sir, I hear some trains go tooty-toot-toot.
Well, that's right. And I hear the other trains go chuggity-chug-chug. I know that conch on it. I know they go clickety-clack and toot-toot-toot and chuggity-chug-chug. Now, which one's a mail car?
Well, now, wait a minute. Some trains go shh.
That right, too? Which trains go shh?
Well, they go shh.
standing in the station. That's when. I know they go shh when they're standing in the station and clickety-click and toot-toot-toot and chuggity-chug-chug when they eat.
I'm gonna get your mask ready. Well, some trains go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity.
And I just a second, Quilly. When do trains go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity?
Well, they go bibbity-bobbity, bobbity-bibbity-bibbity when they're crossing the trestle. That's when.